With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. It's the podcast that proves the trivial things in life really do matter the most. It's, yes, you're right, it's Is It Just Me? With your host, Joe Elvin, that's me, by the way, and him.
And I'm James Williams.
Hi, and of course, it's never just us, is it?
Absolutely.
Thank
not.
God for that. And we do have the guest to end all guests this week. I don't know, like the Marmite of of Britain, really. It's like really needs no introduction. Television presenter, host of Good Morning Britain. Just kind of professional bastard, really. Hi, Piers Morgan.
What a delightful introduction. I must say. Can I just say, by the way, I love Marmite, so I don't see that as being anything other than a great compliment.
No.
But it's an acquired taste. That's what it does.
But this is one of the things I do like about you the most, Piers, is you can wrestle the compliment out of any insult that comes your way.
Well, my view about it is we live in such a PC world where everyone seeks to outdo each other in their virtue-signalling, angelic way. You know, I do this for everybody. I do more than you do. We're all wonderful. Everyone's great. And of course, real life isn't really like that. I tend to just say what I think, and that gets me sometimes into trouble. And other times, rather like a nice spread of good Marmite, people go, oh, I like the taste of that.
I like the cut of that jib.
Yes.
But do you think a lot of the time, Piers, people don't realise that you are trying to get reactions, you're trying to start debates and, a dialogue a lot of the time.
But question. Yeah. Do you genuinely, do you sometimes just think, I don't 100% agree with this, I'm going to poke that one in there because I know that...
Sometimes I don't genuinely know what I think about an issue. Yeah. I'm quite happy to thrash it out with a debate. What I'll always try and do is take a position.
Yeah,
but I can be persuaded. I mean, it doesn't happen very often, I have to say, but I can be persuaded that I'm wrong by somebody who really knows their stuff and gives me a compelling argument. What I really feel strongly about, I've got four kids, and they've been through universities and drama colleges and so on. And you see more and more universities in this country now where they've got this kind of safe space mentality. They no platform anyone they don't agree with, normally on the right of the political divide and so on. It never used to be like that.
Yeah.
I mean, in the old days, universities were a hotbed of debate, of democracy. And now it's like, if you don't agree with us, and I see the same thing on social media, if you don't think Trump's a complete imbecile and the next Hitler, then you must be immediately sentenced to social media death. Similarly, if you didn't vote for Remain, and you dare to think that Brexit may not be a disaster, you must also be sentenced to social media death. And of course, the reason that Brexit and Trump happened is because actually most people aren't on social media. They're not part of this weird little bubble. Yeah. They don't agree with the mob rule. They make their own minds up about stuff. And actually, that's how these things happen, and everyone appears to be shocked. Well, no, people on social media are shocked. So, my central plank of what I do, whether it's on Good Morning Britain or in the Daily Mail columns, is to stimulate proper debate so that people can get well informed and they can make decisions about stuff which actually really matters. And they could do it from an informed point of view. And if that means
got my PA bringing you coffee,
I'll say.
Would you like me to pour it into a cup?
I'd actually like a silver salver, please.
I don't know whether yours.
He's not joking.
Don't need sugar. Sweeten up as it is, as I'm sure Joe will tell you.
I do fear for discourse.
Yeah.
And on that, I agree with you. I think, well, what you were saying earlier is interesting. I quite often don't voice an opinion on social media because I don't 100% know what I think. Mm. And I don't want to be called out because I don't know absolutely everything about a particular issue. Mm. And I think that that's kind of a shame. And I
You've also
think
got
I'm
to have a
that.
Very thick skin. I mean, let's not beat about the bush here. Twitter's become a very sort of febrile and often quite abusive platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I happen to like it because it plays into my kind of psyche of combative debate. But there's no doubt that, I mean, my wife, Celia, who you know well, both of you, she would never go on Twitter because she would hate that reaction from people. And I think that's a real shame that Twitter has become a bit of a jungle in that sense. But at the same time, it's massively popular. It's incredibly well followed. And for me, as a columnist and a television presenter who relies on provocative debate as my raison d'etre, it's a very good way of actually floating ideas, engaging in debate, finding out what people think. But again, I come back to my central point of doing this is to stimulate democratic debate, which I think is incredibly important.
Yeah.
You know, I don't only follow on Twitter people I agree with. No. I think it's really important. I follow lots of people who actually I find incredibly annoying, right? And probably the same way people follow me. But I do it so I get what the other part of the echo chamber is saying, what they're hearing, what they're listening to. You know, when I go to America, I watch Fox News and I watch CNN and I watch MSNBC, and by watching all of them, you get a much more rounded picture of things like the Trump phenomenon than if you just watched a channel that hates him.
Mm. Have you ever been hurt by something that someone said to you on Twitter?
Well, sometimes you wake up in the morning, the first thing you read is, I hope you get beheaded by ISIS, and you're like...
Look, I was in a bad mood,
Can you at least wait until I've had my cornflakes, you know? Yeah. No, not really. I mean, to be honest with you, it would only hurt me, funnily enough, it would only be if it was somebody either I truly respected, who I didn't know perhaps, but somebody I really idolised from afar, a sporting hero or somebody. I mean, I remember being a bit annoyed when, funny enough, when John Legend blocked me. And he only did it because I'd been engaged in a Twitter spat with his annoying wife, Chrissy Teigen.
Oh, we love Chrissy.
Who I think is arguably the world's most annoying woman. And she's married to an incredibly wondrous talent.
I love you, Chrissy, being my best friend.
We love you, Chrissy. Yeah, Chrissy. Listen, you don't have to suck up to her anymore. You're not running Glamour anymore.
Yeah, but I'm running.
You don't need her for a cover. Yeah. You don't need Chrissy Teigen. She's way below
52
you.
52 bloody covers. Come on.
But it's that kind of thing where that was a crushing moment. John Legend blocked me. I was like, oh, because of his wife. And it's like, can't we separate the two?
What did you do to Chrissy?
No, I just got into an argument with her because she was just being so abusive to me on Twitter about, I'm thinking about Trump or something. And I've always been Trump, you know, I know him very well, been a friend of mine for 10 years. I wrote 36 columns about him last year. 18 were positive, 18 were negative. I try to be fair about it. But you're not allowed to be fair. You know, the liberal world only allows you to think he's the devil and only allows you to think Brexit is a disaster. And I don't buy into any of that. I voted Remain and I wouldn't vote for Trump. But I'm absolutely happy to concede that there are good parts of both of them.
Have you always had this self-belief and this thick skin? Or is it something that you've developed over time?
Yeah, I mean, my it
is amazing.
My mum remembers me reading the Daily Mail aged about 7 years old and just pontificating about stuff in the paper. Yeah. My village mates will tell you I was always this opinionated. I used to be thrown out of my local pub, the Royal Oak in Newark, regularly for getting drunk and just being obnoxious with my opinions. And being very argumentative. My kids, you know, my idea of a dream holiday is I take my three sons away to a nice Caribbean resort and we just have dinner every night and argue for 2 hours over a bottle of wine and some beers.
Oh my God, that just sounds exhausting.
I know.
I'm creating new monsters, but I really think it's important that they are prepared to engage in debate, not least with themselves.
Thing is, though, Piers, I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I've mentioned to people that you're coming on, it's the Marmite reaction.
Sure.
You either get people say, "Oh my god, I love him," or someone go, "Oh my god, he's a twat."
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But I have to say, I don't actually know you that well, Piers. But I know enough people close to you to know there is actually a very sweet, kind, loyal side to you.
Well, don't kill them.
I know, but this is true, isn't it? Come on, Joe.
Own it. Yep.
And I just think a lot of stuff. I do worry sometimes. You almost let yourself be portrayed as too much of the pantomime.
Yeah, but I don't care. No, I don't care. No, I really don't care what people think.
Really?
No, because I mean, basically, I have a polarised reputation because I express opinions. I'm not going to stop.
No.
So if you think that just, you know, because I certain opinions are very polarising, you know, and I go against, like, take the first women's march after Trump was elected. That was never about women's rights. I have throughout my career promoted more women, when I was at the Daily Mirror, promoted more women to top jobs and paid them just the same as the men or more than any editor in the history of the Daily Mirror. And they'll all tell you that. But I was not prepared to sign up to this ridiculous march where it was basically Madonna screaming about blowing up the White House.
But I, so don't, I don't
by, by writing that, I got into loads of trouble, but I would still argue now, looking back on it, I was completely right.
I don't understand why you get so angry about stuff like that, about, you know, women expressing. For me, it was the fear of the erosion of women's rights. That's what made me march. That's it was a stand.
I'm not saying
that
you weren't marching for well-intentioned reasons. I could only go on what I was watching on television around the world, and it was hideous. It was just a bunch of screaming celebrities abusing Donald Trump because they hate him. Well, you can hate Donald Trump as much as you like, but actually, let's fight for what is really important, which is women's rights. You know, is everybody's hero here by comparison to Trump? My favourite question is, how many illegal immigrants did Obama deport in 8 years? Do you know?
No, of course not.
Have a guess.
Illegal immigrants are breaking the law, aren't they?
But so I don't even know...
Can you both spit out a number?
I don't even know what a baseline figure would be, no.
A million.
Yeah.
1,000,001.
3 million.
Wow.
He was the greatest deporter in the history of the United States presidency. He dropped more bombs in his last year than any American president in 1 year in history. He campaigned originally by saying he'd shut Guantanamo Bay because it was the biggest abuse of human rights he'd ever seen in America. It's still open. So you can create a totally different picture of Saint Barack, and I could create, from my knowledge of him, a very different picture of evil Donald Trump. From my knowledge of him, very loyal guy, being very interesting, I think, in his presidency, on the economy, doing some really interesting stuff that's really beginning to work. And my guess is he'll probably get re-elected. Now, when you say these things, people are absolutely horrified. I'm like, well, I did try and warn you, he'd get elected. Mm. And I kept being told, there is no chance Donald Trump will win. There's no chance Brexit's ever going to happen. And this, again, comes back to this kind of echo chamber that people prefer to live in. And it's very safe, and it's all their own people. They don't have friends who don't agree with them. They don't dine or go to the wine bar with people who don't agree with them. I find that baffling, that anyone would want to live their lives surrounded by people that they only agree with.
Well, this is where we get back to, I think, that print media is going to have its resurgence, its renaissance, because of the
print
fact
media
that...
is dead.
No, absolutely not.
Dead,
but
as a doornail.
I speak as somebody
who spent nearly 30 years and ran two national newspapers, but print newspapers are dead and will be dead within 10 to 15 years. And digital newspapers will be alive and kicking, led by the Daily Mail, which is the biggest English-speaking newspaper website in the world. And that's the way it's all going to go. Magazines, I think, are an interesting thing. I think many will fall by the wayside. The stronger brands may well survive and thrive. That there'll always be a market for a monthly good magazine, and it might be ever more beautifully produced and very high quality and aimed at that kind of marketplace. So let's not kid ourselves. Print media, in terms of print format, has a very small, short,
but
small shelf.
But we have to get to a point where we can trust online sources a lot more than we do at the moment. And that's why I think, yeah.
Fake news will get worse and worse.
Yeah.
And Facebook have to wake up in particular.
Yeah.
You know, did a thing this morning on Martin Lewis, the financial
guy.
He's got all these fake, promos involving him. And people have been fleeced of £100,000 in one case. I have the same fake stuff with me about Bitcoin and things. They're all completely fraudulent.
Yeah.
And they're all appearing on Facebook, which pretends it's not a publisher, but it is a publisher.
Just to make it immune from being held up to the same levels they would have
they
to
don't
be.
Want to, they don't want to be tasked with the responsibility for what appears on their platform.
It is
to
crazy.
Me, you can't anymore do that. It's a bit like Twitter, when ISIS use it as a propaganda tool. No, you can. You are a publisher.
Majority of people you know use their Facebook feed as their news outlet, right. As in their news feed. So for them to have the stance that they don't have a responsibility is, quite frankly, outrageous. But
they should be regulated better.
I feel like Piers is going to be a natural for this show, Joe. We've not even got onto any official topics yet. We're already setting the world to right. Well, you were born ready, Piers, but I think, are you ready to do some topics?
Of course.
Okay,
let's go.
Right, Piers, Joe, let's kick things off. I had this epiphany the other day when a friend of mine, who genuinely is like a birthday Godzilla in terms of how much they love and adore their own birthday, mm-hmm. and I'm the exact opposite of that. And so I'm just wondering, is it just me who actually hates my birthday? And before you say it, it's not about getting old. It really isn't. It's not my ego.
Of course it is.
It's not my ego being that fragile. No,
Now you just told a barefaced lie.
No,
of course it's about you getting old.
It's not all about that, though.
I don't know you that well, but looking at you, you're a man where a physical appearance is important to you. Everything's immaculate, right?
Do you like the beard? It's well, you.
Thank you.
But it's
very
all been beautifully crafted, right?
Yeah.
The hair, the beard, everything. So you're a guy who takes, you know, you take good care of yourself.
I try.
And you pride yourself on how you look. And every time you get older by a year, it hits you like a sledgehammer. How old are you?
Are you trying to make me cry?
How old are you?
41.
41. See, even saying it hurt you. Right? Whereas me, I was always the wonder kid of British newspapers. That was how I was always described. And they used to use it as a stick to beat me. I was too young, too inexperienced. I was the youngest member of the News of the World staff, of the entire staff, when I became the editor. So I always had the reverse psychology of hating the fact that I was always basically positioned as a kid.
As the baby.
As the baby, too young to be doing what he was doing, too inexperienced and so on. And I remember the first time that I was described as, like, you know, I can't remember, experienced or veteran or something. I punched the air with joy. And now, I mean, I've always had massive parties on my birthday. Dinner parties, big parties, you've been to them.
Yeah.
And I had a great one in LA last month for my 53rd birthday. Loved it. Because to me, every year I've had, honestly, has been fascinating. And as long as you've got reasonably good health, that's the key thing.
Yeah.
I think that worrying about getting old, when actually all you get is a bit more wise.
Well, I can see there is an element to that, but this actually genuinely comes from, I'm not a shy, retiring wallflower by any means, but I find the pressure of a birthday party or doing anything where it's all about you and you have to make a speech or people are all coming or they're not coming.
Piers hates all of that.
Well, yeah, he loves that, clearly.
Well, I love, love it all being about me.
Yeah.
I love a good party. Yeah. I love organising them. I have a big Christmas drinks party every year, which everyone now comes to.
Yeah.
And it's just, I love the randomness of it. We're at 10 o'clock in the evening. We had rugby players carrying out newsreaders. We had
Dynamo doing tricks.
Dynamo
pitched
up and did card tricks. Yeah. And it was just great fun. I love all that. So to me, parties, birthdays, all that kind of thing, they're an excuse to see friends, to celebrate life, and to celebrate the fact we're all still alive.
That's my thing. I think you get to an age where you just think, hey, I made it to another one.
Right. So do you enjoy your birthday now?
I never. My birthday always
How old
falls.
Are you?
I'm 48.
Did you like saying that?
I don't care.
You won't care for another 2 years, but you won't like turning 50.
Why? I don't care. I think more women need to own their age.
Don't you think women don't like turning 40? They definitely don't like turning 50. And my mother said that 70 was a horror story.
No, I don't. I don't like the attitude. I don't like the assumption that you're supposed to hate your age. If you know, my age is on Facebook, and people say, "Oh, well done for being brave."
We all need to own our ages. I think
it's
idea
ridiculous.
That people aren't asked their age. Yeah. I think it's ridiculous. Everyone should be, and you should be. And I'm with you on that. You know, I would never lie about my age. There's nothing more embarrassing, I think, when you're caught out for that.
But this will be interesting. My next birthday, normally for the last 15, 16 years, my birthday has been smack bang in the middle of Milan Fashion Week. So I never get to actually organise anything. Although there was one fabulous time where Donatella Versace grabbed a ring off a model and threw it at me and said, "Have a ring for my birthday." Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
That was a good one.
How much was it worth?
I don't know, but it was bespoke.
Have you got it?
Off the catwalk, yeah.
You've still got it?
That's pretty cool.
It's worth millions.
I don't know. I don't know if it's worth millions.
Weird you mentioned timings, because my other thing, my theory behind why I don't like my birthday is because I'm an August baby. So I'm slap bang in the middle of August, August 15th. So for me, it was always in the middle of summer holidays. No one could ever come to my birthday parties.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they said.
But
anyway,
and the fact that
I'm
fairly odious. Yeah. But my sister is September, so I would always have to have a joint birthday party with my sister. So for me, my birthday was never a big deal.
Well, it's like anyone whose birthday is near Christmas. My youngest son's near Christmas, and they always double up. And they hate that because they don't get as many presents.
It's the worst.
I know friends who are actually born on Christmas Day. I mean, it must be a complete killer.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about you. They all care about somebody else's
birthday. My friend
born
on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
Everyone's too hungover to even remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is just
you.
It's just me then.
I'm afraid it is.
Well, I'm sure there's somebody out there that agrees with me. And if you do, please drop us an email on the usual email address.
Don't email me, make him paranoid.
podcast@gmail.com. And do send in any other suggestions for topics and guests that you'd like to see on the show. We'd love to hear from you.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Piers Morgan, James Williams, is it just me who has been known to grieve things that aren't a death?
Like what?
Like a job or a piece of clothing. Or,
yeah, you can't. You can't. I mean, I remember being when I got fired from the Mirror, and it was leading all the TV news for about 3 days.
Yeah.
And that night, I've been literally frog marching to the street after 10 years running a national newspaper. And I got back, and about four or five of my mates came around, all the Chinese, loads of bottles of wine, and we watched the TV coverage, howling with laughter. And it was like watching my own obituary. It was like I was dead, literally. And there are all these absolute tossers turning up on screen to pay either fake, sincere tributes or nailing me. And they've been waiting to do it for ages. And it
have you had a list for revenge?
Oh, sorry, yeah, of course. I've exacted terrible revenge on all of them.
Yeah.
But it was very, very good fun. But I also, I've always felt, every time I've had lots of highs and lows in my career, and I've always felt that everything's an opportunity. There's no point crying about it. There's no point getting upset about it. Use it as a springboard to something else. If you can do that, if you have that kind of rejuvenating quality to your character. And I remember Kelvin McKenzie, when he was a son, he said the single most annoying thing about me was he'd give me the most ferocious bollocking of all time. And within an hour, I was bouncing back into his office with a big cheeky grin and a big story. And he found that incredibly irritating, but also quite impressive. And I think I've always had that ability, and I think it's a really good ability, where the worst thing is to do is to wallow in self-pity or sulk, because it doesn't get you anywhere. And in fact, you exude an air of death. Mm. You may as well kill yourself. It's like, come on, nothing's as bad as death. If you work from that standpoint, death, then serious illness. After that, everything is workable. Yeah. Whether it's moving house, which everyone says is so stressful, whether it's losing your house, financial problems, divorce, whatever it may be, nothing is as bad as serious illness or death.
No, but I think anything.
Agreed.
I think
it's okay to feel sad about it.
Yeah, and I think anything
you can feel sad, but be reflective and learn from it.
Yeah.
But don't wallow. Wallowing is a terribly abusive quality.
I think it's other piece. Not everyone is as resilient or tenacious as you are, and some people will.
No, but they could be. They could be.
Well, they will take a bit longer.
My issue with modern society is that we're breeding a bunch of anxious weaklings. The number of people dropping out of university through anxiety has quadrupled in the last 5 years at precisely the same rate that we spend our entire time talking about anxiety and about people's feelings and about how they're... And my theory is not that people who have proper depression absolutely need everyone's focus, attention, help and treatment. But people who just find it difficult to deal with run-of-the-mill life and need a bit of a kick, metaphorically speaking... You know, people shouldn't be afraid to do that and to say, come on, let's get yourself together. I do it with my kids.
I do worry about the awareness of awareness.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
I think there's far too much talk about stuff that then makes people
think they
believe. And I think there's a culture of victimhood, which is sweeping everywhere, mainly an American-driven thing. It's come to this country where everybody sort of wants to have a badge of victimhood about themselves. And my worry about that is, A, I think it's quite a weak thing to have for yourself, to think of yourself as a victim generally, if you can avoid it. Secondly, those who really are victims in life, and there are many of them, right, whether they have severe addiction, severe depression, whatever it may be, I don't think they get the attention they need. You know, I read last year, and it really annoyed me, you know, some survey, 34 million people in Britain are mentally ill. No, they're not. They're not, right? Because you take into that people who maybe you know, have lost a parent and are grieving and stuff. That's not mental illness. That's life. Life has a lot of things which throw themselves at you. And, you know, your ability to deal with them comes, I think, from a more confident attitude than perhaps the new generation in particular are being encouraged to have. They're being encouraged to open up about everything, you know, open all their feelings, tell us all about your problems. And they start to think they've got problems. And you end up with these statistics, like at university, horrific rates of suicide at universities at the moment, terrible rates of dropouts from anxiety, and it can't be a coincidence that this is all happening at the same rate everyone is talking about this.
Some people would say that the suicides are because people have pent-up feelings that they're not dealing with.
But the rates are increasing at the rate that everyone is talking about little else. And my worry with that is that it's just, it becomes, you know, for want of a terrible word, it becomes trendy to talk about these things and to start to think you yourself may be a problem or have a problem when you may not have a big problem. And so, it's, you know, I got into trouble for using the phrase man up. I didn't mean for people who have suicidal tendencies or depression or who are very ill. I meant it for people who just actually might be having a few little issues in their lives, which everybody gets. And they need to have conversations with people who can put it in proper perspective and say, come on, this, trust me, life gets a lot worse and better than this. Mm. You've got to pump yourself up a bit, believe in yourself, and go out, and tomorrow's another day. And I don't think there's enough of that conversation happening. And I think if you do try and have that conversation in the way I've just said it, people howl with rage and as if somehow it's wrong. And yet I've used it with people I know, with friends and family stuff, to good, very good effect.
Yeah.
It can work.
I do agree with you, but I think what is dangerous, I think, is that we are in a climate where, you know, we are trying to encourage people to talk more about emotions, feelings,
which I'm not against,
mental health. But
it seems to be all we talk about.
Yeah,
and there've got to be other things that we can talk about in the public arena which don't make everybody think, "Am I mentally ill?"
No.
And that's my worry with it. Is this? It's sort of relentless.
Yeah. But that's where I think it's about perspective, and you do, I think, have a responsibility, whether it's your friends, your family. You know, you don't let... You can tell the difference.
Well, I come from a pretty gritty family that have been through a lot of bad stuff over the years. Like every family. We've got a massive family. When you have a massive family, stuff happens, you know?
Yeah.
Tragedies happen. People, you know, die and terrible things happen. And it's how you deal with it is what I've learned. You know, when I spoke to my grandmother, who's a wonderful matriarch of the family, and my mother, they've both been through a lot of things, and it's that sort of roll your sleeves up and get on with life attitude, which I think the last generation absolutely had instilled in them. They were the post-war generation. So they come through something that's unimaginable to our generation, let alone our kids. And with my kids, I'm like, come on, you know, life's tough, but it could be great fun. So let's accentuate positives. Let's throw your best at everything you can do. You know, strive to win in life. It's not a bad thing to be competitive, to want to win. And you know, have all these schools now banning egg and spoon races and so on. It drives me bonkers. So we've become, I think, just a little soft. And we need to slightly toughen up because life can be quite tough.
Maybe you should do an Instagram account of quotes.
Yeah. Man up. Yeah.
No, God.
Man up for Piers Morgan.
He's asking for more trouble, isn't he?
Well, you can't even...
Okay, lastly on today's show then, guys. I hate myself for saying this, I never thought I would, but is it just me who is gradually warming to the idea of veganism? And I kind of hate myself.
Yes, it is. It's you.
Yes.
It's just you.
I know it's very trendy and zeitgeisty, but I'm just becoming more and more aware. Maybe it's because we're being, you know, besieged by it on social media, but, you know, dairy and dairy farming and just the gradual sort of, you know, erosion of our planet in the transportation of meat. I don't know, it's gradually... I'm a hardened carnivore, always has been, but it is gradually chipping away at me.
Well, I'm a massive hypocrite in that I understand that we need to address this as a global concern, but I don't want to be a vegan.
No!
Just don't want to.
Anything worse. Vegan food is...
It's awful.
Horrible.
It's awful.
Oh, vegans, no. Most vegans look ill. They eat terrible food, and it's like, what's the point? And then they come in normally wearing their leather belts and leather shoes and so on. So there's a rank hypocrisy everywhere, you know? And I've had this debate many times on Good Morning Britain. Look, if you want to be a vegan, I've got no problem. But don't become a vegan terrorist, right? We have, you know, restaurants where that woman was hounded out of her job recently in that restaurant for a sort of jokey thing with vegans and stuff. it's look, if you don't want to eat meat, don't eat meat. But, you know, meat animals eat other meat animals. Mm. That's the law of the jungle. There's nothing wrong or unnatural about it. In the jungle, animals eat animals, right? We're animals. We need a balanced diet that includes meat to live, I believe. Mm. And whenever you see most vegans, there are some exceptions. The Lewis Hamilton, I think, is a vegan. He's obviously a very fit guy. I saw Pamela Anderson the other day. She's a vegan. She looks pretty good. Most vegans I meet are emaciated, very pale, and they have odour issues.
I don't think I know enough vegans to comment on that. I'm fine with vegetarianism.
Yeah.
But it's just when you can't even have cheese.
That's ridiculous.
That's what I'm, you know. I don't want to live in that world.
You can't, you can't basically exist. Yeah. You have to have leaves. You have to have the Victoria Beckham diet.
Her eat a crab stick. So.
Really?
Yeah.
A whole one?
Yeah.
Really?
Once we did a shoot with her and we had to get in some crab sticks especially.
So she's not a vegan.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess that maybe, don't you think though, Piers, that that's a very cliched perception of veganism?
Probably,
and it is changing. I just think that in the end, they're
all about choice until you decide you don't want to be a vegan. And then they're furious. It's like the argument with all these things. And I think there's an argument, again, my issue with the whole, whether it's the gender fluid debate or the veganism debate or whatever, is you have these very, very niche groups who actually want everyone to be like them. Mm. And or all the rules changed for them. Every restaurant signage to be changed to reflect veganism. Every girls' school in the country can no longer say the word girls, even though they're called girls' schools, because it might offend the one gender-fluid person in the school and so on. And I don't think you should be changing society in a dramatic way to cater for minorities. I really don't. And veganism remains a minority in this country. Most people eat a balanced diet, including meat. We shouldn't be made to feel bad about it. And yet you get these vegan terrorists who just scream abuse. I mean, I get them on... I don't know where they get the energy, given they don't eat meat.
Vegan terrorists.
Yeah. Well, where do they get the energy from? Oh, because they're screaming abuse all day long. I'm like, geez, you haven't even eaten a good steak. Where have you got this from? Can't get it from plants.
You know, nuts and pulses can be. Yeah.
I guarantee they'll be still screaming after this podcast.
They will be. I don't know.
You probably have a lot of vegan listeners, don't you? I'd imagine.
Well, we embrace all listeners.
Yeah.
Vegan or otherwise.
Just don't make me eat vegan cheese.
Yeah.
Just don't make me do it.
I'm sure you know there will be some strong opinions out there, so do let us know.
If you can make vegan food taste even remotely tasty,
get in touch.
I'll have a go at it.
Okay.
Once a week.
I think it is out there.
So,
it's like a truth, Piers. It's out there.
So you're slagging all this off and you've actually never had a vegan meal?
Oh, I've eaten them. They're terrible.
Like what?
Huh?
What have you eaten?
Some of those... I've eaten vegan food to try it out. There was a vegan lesbian cafe near me. Literally. It was run by lesbians and they did vegan food.
And that's how they marketed it, did they?
I used to go in there once a week and have a bowl of gruel. And it was horrible.
But it
shut down because nobody wanted to eat it.
Did they market themselves as the vegan lesbians or are you adding the lesbian...
I don't think they hid their sexuality.
No, it's like,
I don't think it was a secret.
It's like it's a big selling point.
I don't think it wasn't on a flyer or anything.
To me, it made them a very unusual emporium to go and have lunch. But I tried my best for once a week, and it was just, honestly, it was just tasteless gruel.
Right, but you're for the persuading, though. We just need to find some good vegan food.
If the vegan food is tastier than my normal fare, I'll eat it, obviously. But
he is open to being persuaded.
I'm always open to being persuaded I'm wrong. It just very rarely happens.
And there's your T-shirt, ladies.
I was going to
say
on that note. Yeah. He's been everything we could have wished for and more. He doesn't disappoint.
Thank you very much, Piers.
My pleasure,
Piers. Thank you.
Your very busy schedule, and you've been up since God knows what time.
I've been up since about 4:45.
How much longer can you do? Because it is hardcore doing the breakfast. Do you think you've got a good?
Well, I did actually quit in the summer, but then they made me the proverbial offer I couldn't refuse. So I'm doing it at least till the end of next year now.
It's hard, but they did
move the studios to 5 minutes from my front door, which has really helped. So that was as of last week. So that's made life a lot easier.
Piers is actually 25, but it's just this breakfast show.
I came back from 3 weeks in LA last week and looked so healthy by comparison to my normally very pallid early morning show, death warmed up look. The people thought I'd actually had plastic surgery. As you can see in the flesh, that's not the case.
He's only been back a week.
Or if it has, I need to get my money back.
Yes, Piers' beauty secrets coming soon.
Exactly. Yeah, I did. Yes. I appeared on Lorraine Kelly with him. And she wanted to get to the bottom of how I didn't have any wrinkles on my forehead, which I don't. I have a very smooth forehead, which is just the way God intended me. And then without me knowing, she got my wife to ring in, Celia, who said that it was actually, that I had such a gigantic ego that it was now pushing through the skin and therefore self-ironing the wrinkles, which was a bit uncalled for.
And when you've got that cheerleader in your corner.
Exactly. When your own wife's taking you down on national TV.
Give
up, love
to Celia. We do love Celia.
I know you do.
Well, thank you as well.
Pleasure.
We do love you.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't say that. Obviously,
sometimes.
The listeners will hate you.
He's got an image job. Thanks,
everyone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.